Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Firefighters Podcast, where we seek to develop, inspire, and motivate the world of the emergency services operator through a series of wide-ranging conversations. Now, before we go any further, just hit that rate, follow, or subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to. It's a key performance indicator for us and helps us reach even more people. Now, here's what we've got for you today. At the end of February 2024, 317 athletes from 29 countries headed to the beautiful Saudi Arabia to take part in the Aramco Challenge Toughest Firefighter Alive. 14 of these athletes were firefighters from the UK Fire and Rescue Service. And over the course of 2 weeks, we did battle with every nation in attendance, from fire truck challenges to PPE challenges to fire station cook-offs. That was a hell of an event. And also the Blue Ribbon Toughest Firefighter Alive. Some of the hardest 40 minutes that firefighters have endured in any firefighter fitness competition across the world. Now, I was lucky enough to be one of those athletes, and as you won't be surprised, I took the opportunity to think, whilst I'm out there with these tactical athletes, these beautiful freaks from all around the world, and our first responder brothers and sisters, to grab a few occasions where we would sit down with some microphones and hear a little bit about what life is like and what the fire service is like in their part of the world. So over the next couple of weeks, we are going to do a quick mini series of a TFA, that's Toughest Firefighter Alive, roundup from a whole bunch of these chats. You're going to hear what the fire service is like in Brazil. How do you join it in America, Canada, Australia? We hear from New Zealand. We hear about all the different competitions that are around the world. We also talk about a lot of health and well-being. So if fitness is not your thing, then fear not, we are going to be delving into lots of different areas, a little bit around how these people started their careers. And of course, we're going to be doing mini kind of debriefs about what the event was like. And there's also some surprising, really heartfelt stuff in there. Some incredible stuff comes out when you sit down with these individuals. I always say that people from the first responder community are absolutely fascinating individuals. The reason they are attracted to our sector is usually because they don't fit in other places, which means they're a little bit wild, a little bit wacky, and absolutely my kind of people. So rest assured, we will be dropping our normal episodes every Monday as well. But consider these a little bit of a bonus and hopefully some insights and some incentives for more fire and rescue services around the world to see the value in the networking and the celebration and also the recognition that is firefighter challenge environments all over the world. So I hope you enjoy this mini series and please think about sharing it with someone else in your circle. We're going lots of different directions where lots of people would take benefit. So don't be selfish. Be sure to tag this, follow it, rate it on the platform you listen to and share it. Bounce it into that WhatsApp group for everyone else to take value from hearing the voices, the stories and the shared lived experiences of firefighters and first responders from all over the world.
Hey, it's honest. It's honest.
Keith Wakefield, the Firefighters Podcast.
There you go, sir. We're doing it.
Oh.
Like right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Sweet.
I'm Andrew Cook. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky, representing the United States and Lexington Fire Department.
Beautiful.
Sarah McGill from Lexington, Kentucky in the States, representing Lexington Fire Department.
Anna Ruzovic. I'm originally from Croatia, but I live in Alabama.
Nice. So how come you guys find yourself here? Talk us through a little bit of the background about comps you've done before, what it's like at home in Kentucky, because again, we have listeners from all over the world that don't have an idea of what fire departments are like all over the world. So give us some information about like what Kentucky's like and how many athletes we've got here.
Well, our department in Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky, there's like 600 of us in our department. And we compete over in the States in the Firefighter Challenge. And our team, we have a team of like 12. And there's half girls, half guys. So we've got a guys team and a girls team.
Fire challenges in the States are huge. Like you have them in every single state and they feed in through the regionals to the nationals.
Yes.
And the UK is still very much in its infancy. We've got like two or three comps really.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So throughout the season, we start in the spring at Indianapolis at FDIC and we run, how many regionals are there? Like five, six?
At least six.
There's like six regionals.
So pissed off. I was supposed to be there this year at that. We just had Russ Timpson, who runs the High Rise Conference at FDIC, and that runs straight into FDIC Indianapolis straight after it. And it's only in like 5 or 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, we get back and it's like
it's
a month
middle
out.
Of April or something like that.
I can't get leave for it yet. I'm still trying. I'm still wrestling.
Someone will sort me out
some accommodation. I just need to get over there. But
there's a ton of people over there.
Yeah,
I think he said something like 40,000 firefighters all go to Indianapolis FDIC, and it's just a festival, and it's absolutely incredible. And you obviously have the Fire Fit style comps there as well.
Oh, so yeah.
That act is a regional for you guys, does it?
Yes, that's our. It always kicks off our season. FDIC does every year, and then there's regionals all over the country. We're broken up into, you know, Southwest, Southeast, North, West, all over. So you can whatever regionals you can get to as many as you can. We try to do like one a month, up to Nationals and then Worlds. Nationals is always in September, and then Worlds is in October. So it's a fun season. We train. You know, we both days off, we're doing something, a lot of CrossFit type stuff, strength stuff, and then we do have a tower that we at our training center at the fire department that we can go train, and we have dummies
and all the
gear. So do
you have like a course set up there most of the time if you're saying you're running these on the monthly?
If you're
running these on the monthly, like, do you have a permanent course set up there?
Yes.
Pretty much. It's like a put up, take down sort of situation, but we're actually in Lexington. We just got a tower donated to us, and we're getting everything set up, and we're gonna build it here in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So you guys specifically do the FireFit model, don't you?
Yeah, it's a quick sprint model, 2 minutes, hopefully around 2 minutes or so. So when we train, we kind of break it up, front half and back half. One day we'll do front half, one day we'll do back half, and then we'll run fulls every now and then. So
what's everyone's kind of sporting background? Because you sit around CrossFit, and I think that's been a fantastic feeder and like prep for stuff like the TFA, because it's that real interval sprint training with the short, like 60 or 90 second recoveries, where this is going to be in a lot of people's wheelhouse, I think.
I did track and field in college. Okay. I went to Tulane in New Orleans, so we did a lot of sprints. But right after college, I started doing CrossFit to kind of keep that competitive edge, and then I found the Firefighter Challenge.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Gore-Tex Professional Fabrics. Now, we all know the working environment of a firefighter is filled with challenges. We face serious risks on the job, such as heat exhaustion, burns, physical and mental stress, and we frequently come into contact with high levels of toxic chemicals. Now, I have been wearing Gore-Tex for nearly 2 decades on the front line, working in hostile environments, tackling challenging incidents from firefighting to water incidents and in urban search and rescue environments. Gore-Tex have a well-earned reputation for protecting professionals in the fire and emergency services through their family of highly innovative, waterproof, breathable moisture barriers that exceeds global performance standards and are trusted worldwide. Gore-Tex, going further together.
Do you think CrossFit's been a massive game changer? Like, not to make it a male-female conversation, but like for women getting into strength and conditioning stuff, because it always used to be super intimidating. You'd have the odd girl would do some powerlifting, but it was a lot of gym bros. Like I've already said, like I used to take loads of steroids and stuff like this because it was the age of the bodybuilders 10, 15 years ago, and there was all these muscle-bound idiot firefighters like me that weren't really very functional. Do you know what I mean? But CrossFit's really changed that. I feel like the age of the giants has kind of gone and everyone's moved to a real more functional thing, which for health and longevity is far, far better. When I got rid of all of my addictions, like you can compete as an athlete for far longer with that sort of sustainable model.
And it's got like a, I don't know, like you can do it with your couple people or whatever, and it's like a ton of fun. You do that, like you look forward to that like every day, like that's what you do. Whereas bodybuilding is kind of like a loner's thing a little
bit.
It is
a loner thing.
Unless
you
have
like
a specific group of
mantle
people.
Mantle piece muscles. You couldn't do shit. You just looked like this big, like, I was 24 stone back then. I was like, it wasn't very functional. I'd get up 3 stars, I'd be blowing out my ass. It doesn't really work for it. How did you get into CrossFit?
I moved to Alabama and I just joined a CrossFit gym because I heard really good things about it. I just about the community of the people in it, and you know, everybody's so supportive. Nobody really cares about what time you finish a certain workout in, but everybody's so supportive, and that's just, I kind of fell in love with it.
So how do you feel like this, the prep for what you guys do? Have you ever done the TFA before? Have you ever done Tough Spot for Our Live model?
No, we've never done the specific model before.
Never. We hadn't heard of it until about 2 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
So I did it in Germany a few years back, and it's different models of it across the world. Some of them you actually do it under air as well, so you do the masks under SCBA. Yeah. Looking at some of the courses, looking at the YouTube stuff, what have you identified as like bits? Have you done any extra training for it? Like, what prep have you guys done for it? I know you said you heard about 2 months ago, but like, there's a few pivots. Yeah. Some people can overcomplicate this stuff. It's not rocket science, but
yeah, I think it's all like stuff we do on the fire ground, but like you don't really roll hose for time. So we did some little stuff like that just to, you know, find out little things that will, you know, make it a little bit quicker, make it more efficient. Like throwing ladders, we don't really throw roof ladders, you know, we throw 24-foot, 28-foot ladders than use roof ladders on the roof. So just going over a little technique stuff like that. And that 13-story stair climb, we did that a few times just to kind of find a pace, because, you know, you like to just balls to the walls right from the jump.
Well, it's 20 stories. The staircase challenge is going to be 20.
Oh, so even worse.
So at the end of the TFL, it's 10 floors.
Yeah.
So sorry, when you say 13, so yeah, there's a three-story into the hall, and then stage four is the 10-story.
Yeah.
And then, but if you're doing the staircase challenge or the stair run challenge, which would be Monday, Tuesday, that's just straight 20 stories.
Okay, yeah. So trying to figure out.
Don't you carry a hose pack? No, you don't.
I don't think so.
It's just in full PPE.
I hope not.
Yeah.
But you do carry the 2 10-kilo plates for the three-story with the hall as well. Those aspects of it. What's the fitness standards of your guys' services, of your department? Like, what do you have to get into it? Because this is like a real bone of contention for me. Ours are embarrassingly low. It's ridiculous.
Oh,
and it
ours.
Allows... And this is with the greatest respect. Like, I want to look at some American firefighters, see all the YouTubes and stuff. Some of the really knowledgeable truckies or engine crews, it's the stereotypical... really big old fat firefighter with the mustache, and I'm like, a level of professionalism to me is you should still be able to do the thing.
I
don't see an excuse why you should let yourself get into that. And that sounds a bit harsh and like a personal attack on perhaps anybody that's listening, but
it's not
harsh, you know what I'm saying? Reality. Where,
what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, you're in the same boat as
I know we're speaking into an echo chamber because we're clearly all into that sort of thing, but what are the fitness standards for you guys?
So
to start off, to get in the fire service, we have this thing called the CPAT. And
CPAT.
It's
That's what I was trying to remember earlier. I called it something else.
And it starts with 3 minutes and 20 seconds on the stair stepper. And then you have to go through a little, you know, carry some equipment, drag a dummy.
What's the weight of your dummies?
It's 175
pounds.
175 pounds. That's still only 50 kilos, isn't it?
But the CPAT, it's bare minimum. I mean,
a little bit more than that. But not
2.2 pounds to a kilo. Well, 175 pounds, so it's
probably
65 kilos.
Yeah,
something like that. Which I think is way too light still. And ours are lighter, ours are 55.
Well,
but like the average weight of people is like 12, 13 stone now.
Yeah.
So.
And the average weight of a fireman is probably more than that.
With full bunker gear on and you're
79 and a half.
See what I mean? So we should be doing heavier than that. I personally feel like the stuff we do in the UK.
Especially with the people that we normally take care of, right?
I was 24 stone as an operational firefighter. Even now, I'm still 17 stone, which is 112 kilos, you know, 240 pounds.
You're also dealing with fat, obese people all the time.
Yeah, we don't go and rescue fit, healthy people. You go and rescue people that are obese, that's life is in a bin fire.
In other news, this episode is brought to you in partnership with MSA Safety. Today, we have them to thank for the improved firefighter safety through connectivity in their brand new connected firefighter system. At the center of the connected firefighter platform is the MSA M1 SCBO with telemetry. You can view battery life, air pressure, and estimated time remaining either independently on the M1 itself or from the Luna connected device screen. Also, still with the air status, alarm information, search status, and all of this provided to the incident command for confident decision making during the scene. That integrates straight in with the Luna system, which is a wireless all-in-one device creating an independent search and rescue network, providing edge detection, enhanced personal thermal imaging, while simplifying post-scene reporting and data retention. One of the key parts of the Luna is their FAST system, the Firefighting Assisting Search Technology. This combines directional and distance information with thermal imaging to help find separated teammates and decrease response time. It actually connects you to the other crews in the vicinity for a unified search during the time of mutual aid by instantly notifying the network of lunar devices when there is a downed crew member, allowing for a prompt search and rescue. All of this then plugs into the FireGrid system for cloud-based connectivity, real-time information, and data-driven decisions for the incident commander. It enables you to see the exact location of your firefighters on the scene. And it doesn't require you to be sat on the station. The MSA hub then provides a wireless gateway straight to the cloud, enabling wireless on-scene data for local and remote incident command for additional eyes on the scene. MSA are truly taking massive strides in the future of improved firefighter safety through connectivity. MSA is dedicated to increasing safety in the fire service through technological advancements. Various feature enhancements, new products, partnerships, and integrations will provide additional capabilities readily accessible by products, software, and services in the brand new MSA Connected Firefighter platform. Now back to the show.
We're starting to kind of break through that. You know, the fire service is very traditional, so you've got all the older guys that are going to push back, and, you know, we're breaking through those barriers to kind of get from that old traditional ways of no physical fitness testing into, oh, we need to pay attention to this. So I think in the States, it's department by department, really what you want to do. Our department in Lexington has formed committees, and we're building standards right now as we speak. So it's been kind of good to see some progress, and we're trying to figure out our own test, and they're working with different people to figure out a test that's good, a good standard, not too hard, not too easy, and then how all that's going to work legally with, you know, if you can't pass, now what do we do?
That's the
legally
thing.
So
you raise the bar,
yeah.
You might lose half the population, yeah, of firefighters.
And I think that's the other hard part.
It's already hard already at this point.
Yeah.
That's not just us, that's across the United States.
And that's fighting
the
city.
When it comes to other aspects of health and well-being, like with the decontamination in America, you guys are way farther ahead than us. There's obviously the big PFAS conversation that's all going on at the minute. The unions are all heavily involved in that and the longevity of a firefighter's career. But then I feel like we're skipping over a lot of the fundamentals, which could really be helping people stay in the job a lot longer as well.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is the department wants things, but we've got to fight the city, you know, and the people that are paying for us. The city, they don't always see firefighters, they see money, you know, that's coming out of their pocket. So it's trying to show them why we need to do this stuff, why we can't hire this person because they can't do the job. You know, no matter if they're the minority that we need, they can't do it. Not every woman
can
do the job.
You ask a member of the public, they don't care if you're, you know, pink, blue, two arms, six arms, long hair, short hair. They want the fittest, strongest firefighter to be able to come and rescue them.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, that's where things get a little bit confusing, You do seem a lot more patriotic and supportive of your first responders in the States, though. Now, I know we've had, the 9/11 and the incidents. Like, we had Mickey Farrell. He runs Top Floor Tactics. Mm-hmm. He's from FDNY. He's done 26 years there, third generation firefighter. And we had him on the podcast. And he was saying how that patriotism is still something that's really at the core. And you see it with the way that you have a line of duty death. They close down the street and you have everybody out and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that's only in certain states. But why do you think you guys and girls are so much more patriotic and supportive of your first responders? Or is it still that way to you? Has it changed at all? Has everybody forgotten about 9/11? Or what's the support like for your first responders, though?
No, I think it's we get a whole lot of support and respect from the general public. But looking back, I went to visit a fire department back home in Croatia, and they do not get a lot of respect or support, and it's not as of an honorable career like it is in the States.
Starting out, for us, they look at the blue-collar work. Like we say, we're trying to attract more people from like an Asian community or something like that. They don't want the job because it's looked as knuckle dragging, low paying work. It's not skilled technical work. They're like, I don't want my son or daughter to have that job because it's not a good job. It's just tough.
Yeah, we do have little kids coming to the station, and just they're like, oh, I want to be a firefighter when I grow up, and their eyes just light up when they see us. So that just means a lot to us.
What about yourselves? What's it like in Kentucky? What's the support like for your crews? You guys are allowed to do a lot more stuff in the communities by the look of things.
It's pretty big support, I would say. COVID kind of like was a weird wave of emotion, positive and negative. But overall, it's been pretty great. And like people who doesn't want to be a firefighter in America? You know, like sort of at least when you're little.
We say that, but we really struggle in the UK. What's recruitment like? Well, how big is your department for starters? And like,
it's
how
600 people.
600 people. So that's the same for the service I work for. We're 600 operational staff. A lot of ours we still have on call. You would think of them as volleys, like volunteers, but ours are all paid. Are yours all full time?
Yeah, we're all full time.
You don't have any volunteers.
All full time.
Yeah. All full time. What's the recruitment profile like now in terms of their training? How long's training school for you guys?
26 to 28 weeks, I can't remember.
Before they get put on station.
But yeah.
So ours is 8.
They come in, they put them.
How terrible is that?
They certify them as EMTs. So it kind of depends. Like when I went through, it was 14 weeks.
Yeah.
So it kind of, it varies from class to class, depending on what's going on and what kind of group you have. So everyone in my class, we were all at least EMTs, if not paramedics. So
you have to do that training before you join?
No. So we will train you and get you your EMT certs. and then they go through the fire cert to make you a firefighter, full-time firefighter. And then we also have a paramedic, our own paramedic class.
Because I know some places in Canada, you've got to do those qualifications before you can even apply for the job. And which so, I kind of like. Yeah. It shows you put a big investment in yourself, but it also is very expensive to do that. Whereas us, if you just show up and smile,
we'll pay you to do it.
Pass the low bar of the fitness test, we'll let you in and then nurse you all the way through it sometimes.
So, yeah, basically.
Today's podcast is powered by our partner Lifelines and their revolutionary approach to functional hydration. Just like in firefighting, water is essential for body function, but studies show more than 80% of firefighters are dehydrated. A 25-year study findings from the National Institute of Health showed poor hydration to be linked to early aging and chronic disease, and even mild dehydration results in significant negative impact outcomes, including headaches, exhaustion, rapid pulse, irritability, and poor cognitive function. A study conducted by Yale University showed that participants who were just 1% dehydrated had a 12% increase in errors when performing tasks that required cognitive flexibility. In addition, dehydration is shown to worsen mood and attitude, contribute to confusion and poor decision making, and negatively affect memory and judgment. In other words, you really don't want your incident commander, firefighter, or for that matter, any first responder on a critical scene to be even slightly dehydrated. Mild dehydration occurs when a person is just 1.5% dehydrated, a condition that does not even trigger the thirst response in most people. So just imagine how quickly a firefighter or any first responder can and does become dehydrated in their day-to-day duties, which is why I address my hydration first thing every day with Lifelines. Go into the notes for this episode and specifically check out Lifelines Hydro Fuel and Hydro OG by clicking in the notes for the podcast for a clean energy solution designed for those who demand more from their day. Now back to the show.
Don't get it wrong, like, you gotta do all that, but you have to do it, and you have to pass, and like, you could get fired if you don't make the grades or pass your stuff or whatever. Like,
have you got a big enough pool of people to backfill them with that then? You can afford to get rid of them.
Yeah.
We're hiring two classes a year right now, and we have been for the last probably 5 years. So, I mean,
it's about 30 something people in class.
Constantly putting people in.
So London Fire Brigade is the biggest one in the UK, and they've got about 6,000 staff. They're doing 24 courses this year.
That's
So I go and assess the end of them. They've got about 12 to 15 people per class.
Yeah.
How long does it take?
8 weeks.
So they do
an 8 week, that's what I'm saying though.
Is that just fire or is that EMS and fire?
So that's another great conversation. Yeah. So like, you guys and girls have been doing the corresponding for decades. It walks hand in hand with the role.
Yeah.
We in the UK, and I say we, widely, the Fire and Rescue Service appear to politically be very much against the first the dual responding and the co-responding doing the medical side of it. Now, I would love for us to do it. My brother-in-law's a paramedic. I'd love to train up as a paramedic. It keeps you more interested in the job, diversifies your skill set, brings more funding into the service because you provide that EMS capacity as well. But we don't. Obviously, we have the NHS, we have a National Health Service, and that's all of our paramedics fall under that.
Okay.
But how does it work for anyone that doesn't know anything about? Are all of your firefighters EMS trained as well?
Yes.
And do they have to cross crew? You know, the ambulances and the trucks.
Normally, it's by department, but all of us are paramedics as well.
Yeah, they require us to be paramedics in 3 years of joining the fire service.
You gotta be at least an EMT to be on our job.
Yeah. But you don't have to be to get hired. We will train you to do
What's
that.
The core profile in terms of EMS versus fire? How many, like, if you had to put a percentage on it, what's the percentage of calls that are EMS?
Oh, 80 or more.
Yeah. That's what some people in the UK hate about it, is they don't like the idea of just going out to Mrs. Goggins who's got a bleeding nose.
Yeah.
And they don't. Because some of them think, I joined to be a firefighter and I don't want to do blood and gore and all that sort of stuff.
Fell down and, I don't know, bust your ankle or something like that. Yeah. Like, it's a lot of stuff like that.
But I always use the family test. Like, if it was your husband, wife, whatever, like, would you want them to be waiting 6 hours for an ambulance?
Yeah.
Or would you, you know, you've got a competent firefighter, EMS around the corner. You would go and help. You would go and do it.
That's the idea.
That's why you joined the job, surely.
It's a good skill set to have for even everyday life, you know? So why wouldn't you just want to be better? You know, it makes you a better fireman because you learn, like, at our department, you have to ride on the ambulance for so many years before you can go back to an engine or a ladder. And there, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about your city, about running a crew, running calls, having control of a scene.
You learn a lot
talking
about
on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, so you learn a lot in those years, and it makes you a better fireman at the end of the day. Plus, it's fun. I love being a paramedic. I mean, yeah, you run shit calls sometimes, but you get to do a lot of cool stuff, too. So.
What's the rank profile for you guys and girls? What levels is everybody at?
We're firefighter, paramedic.
Nice.
But for us, it goes firefighter, lieutenant, captain, district chief, or major.
District chief.
And then battalion chief, and then assistant chief, and the chief. Yeah. Those are appointed positions.
How long have you all been in? How?
About 5 years.
Five.
Working on 11.
11?
11, yeah.
7 years.
Cool. 5 years. Congratulations, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
This cakes is on you then.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah.
Well, look forward to seeing you guys out on the course this week. Good luck with it all, and hopefully we can catch up after and see what the learnings are. Because there's thousands of people that won't get an opportunity to come to something like this. And the beauty of these sort of audible time capsules is so that people can have it here, see what their experiences are like. And also, I'll be honest with you, people are fascinated to hear from firefighters all across the world, and most of us will never write a book or will never put our memoirs down, and all of this sort of experience will get lost. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Firefighters Podcast was created to recognize, acknowledge, inspire, and hopefully even motivate these incredible individuals who have chosen to be part of the first responder community. Our driving purpose is to create a legacy resource for the current and future generations of firefighters and first responders. We get some incredible feedback from listeners and guests. And as the podcast grows, our desire to create longevity and sustainability means that we are asking for the support of our listeners. If you want to support the podcast, if you want to get discounts to our merchandise, hoodies, clothing, coins, patches, tallies, and also access to all of the incredible documents get shared with us from our podcast guests and sector leaders, and please head over to our Patreon page, and for just £3 a month, you can support the future of the podcast. Please finally hit that follow, subscribe, or rate button on the platform you're listening, and wherever you're in the world, please support your emergency services responders, and thank you for listening.